Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Where the line between neighbor and nightmare is razor thin. Welcome to Hidden Killers. With Tony Bruschi, featuring former prosecutor and defense attorney Eric Faddis.
The Delphi murder case has taken many twists and turns for years, but one of the biggest questions remains, why did investigators ignore the FBI's affidavit pointing to Ron Logan? His property was a crime scene. His alibi was false. And yet, the case suddenly shifted focus to Richard Allen. Years later, was crucial evidence ignored? Did law enforcement push for a conviction over truth? Today, we're joined by defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis to break down the legal side of the baffling decisions made. Eric, based on what we know, was there enough probable cause to go and make an arrest on Ron Logan? It seemed like there was. The FBI seemed to say there was. And if so, why was he not pursued?
You know, there are significant pieces of evidence tying Ron Logan to this case. Now, probable cause is a pretty low standard. It's really just like, is there a reasonable probability that someone committed a crime? So it's not a high bar. You know, Ron Logan owned the property where the bodies were found. His alibi turns out to be false. A jail inmate says that he even confessed to these crimes. So when you put all of those things together, I think it surely meets that threshold for probable cause and for bringing a criminal charge.
Let me ask you this. As a defense attorney, let's say, you know, we're going back in time to 2017 here. Ron Logan calls you up and says, I need a defense attorney because this is not looking very good for me. There's two girls that died on my property, murdered on my property. I already called my buddy up and had him make an alibi for me, but I called him before anybody even knew the girls were murdered, before they even found the bodies. But I set that up. They kind of caught me in that lie. My friend ratted me out. You know, there's a lot of other pieces here that don't look so good. I have a history of violence and abuse. My ex-girlfriend's, you know, already calling them saying that he's seen me kind of be, or she's seen me kind of be creepy around other young girls before. And everything else that points towards Ron Logan, how would you as a defense attorney handle that? Would you be like, sorry, dude, this isn't going to work very good for you?
You know, if I was in the jurisdiction where Richard Allen was charged, I'd be a lot more comfortable taking the case, because it seems like there was really kind of a tunnel vision going on once police sort of got wind of Richard Allen and wanted to go that direction. Generally speaking, that would be a super problematic case. You know, we would do everything we could to try and improve the defendant's legal position, or not defendant at that point. But gosh, a bunch of red flags would be going off, and I would probably have to have a come to Jesus talk at some point with that person.
I mean, we just will never know, because he was never tried. He ended up dying a couple years later. And then eventually they shifted their focus over towards Richard Allen. But let's theoretically kind of break down some of these accusations that are out there against Ron Logan. And some of them aren't even accusations. It's just fact. It is what it is. And let's start with the alibi, the false alibi that he had his friend say that took him to the aquarium store, the fish store, during the precise times that the murders likely had taken place. And he does this prior to the bodies ever being found. Where do you go with that if you're an attorney and this is a glaring piece of evidence that doesn't look that good? Doesn't mean you killed them. I guess you could go down the road of, I'm really afraid they're going to, you know, get me on this, but it wasn't me, but it certainly doesn't look good. I mean, how do you go down the road of that one with, fictitious client Ron Logan?
On the one hand, deception doesn't equal murder,
nope.
But it's a bad look, especially when ultimately there are two young girls found murdered on your property. And the police are going to take that into consideration. They're going to look at, you know, what sort of measures were taken to conceal things, to throw police off the track of a person. And that's exactly what it looks like a false alibi in this case would do. And so that should just perk law enforcement's, you know, ears even more to say, hey, look, why is this guy lying to us about where he was? And when you put all those other factors together, it just looks pretty grim for Logan. But it didn't turn out that way.
Then, of course, there's the bodies that were on his property. One of the big issues with the bodies is blood. Where did the blood go? The bodies looked very staged. They were actually like cleaned up. The FBI in their report said, look, whoever did this likely would have been heavily covered in blood. There's really not a lot of ways around this, but there's not the blood on the scene where the bodies were actually found. They found a little bit over here and a little bit over there, but it wasn't really enough to really answer the question of where did all the blood go on an injury that was inflicted upon the girls. Only thing that really makes a lot of sense there is they were moved, they were staged, they were cleaned up, which would require a place to do that. And Ron Logan's house is, you know, 1,400 feet from the actual crime scene. One could go, I mean, again, it's just kind of an assumption, but, you know, you put pieces together and go, well, you got the property right here. One could assume maybe he took the bodies in, cleaned them up, went and staged them. I don't know. I mean, but the thing is, his house was investigated. We'll get to that in a moment, but we just don't know what the pieces of that investigation revealed. How do you argue that one?
Yeah, that's tough, because not only would the person need a place to sort of clean things up, but they would need ready access to materials to clean things up. And there's no allegation that Richard Allen, you know, brought bleach with him and a bunch of towels and whatever else you would need to clean up two very bloody bodies. But if you got a house nearby and you've got resources at the ready, that just increases the likelihood of guilt for Ron Logan there.
That's a very interesting point. I wasn't even thinking of it that way in terms of Richard Allen, because you're exactly right. He raised his hand, said he was out there. He didn't come with bleach. He didn't have any. There was nothing about him that showed that he would have just murdered some kids. And there really wasn't a place in time where he would have been able to go and clean them up and bring them back. And I mean, that required a lot of time when a window shows that he wasn't there for that long of a piece of time. Another very obviously troubling piece to that, but a piece that does not make sense with Richard Allen, but could sensibly make sense with Ron Logan. How about the cell phone data? That's another big piece of this. We hear about this all the time in so many cases, Koberger, you name it. Where did the cell phone put you at the time of the murders? Ron Logan's cell phone data places him near the crime scene around the time of the murders. Granted, he did live there, but the cell phone data even shows he wasn't in his house. He was down in the area where the bodies were actually found. Another kind of tough one that if he was pressed on, if he was brought to trial, I think that'd be a difficult one to argue.
I mean, as a former prosecutor looking at this, not only is the alibi false, he wasn't at the fish store or whatever, but we can actually place him where we believe the vicinity where these murders likely took place, or at least the likely abduction took place. And so, when you put all these pieces together, including digital forensic evidence, that is hard to refute. It's hard for a defense attorney to get in there and say, when the prosecution says his cell phone was where we think this murder happened, defense can't just say no, it wasn't. There's not really an ability to refute that in an objective, scientific fashion.
Obviously, previous crimes don't necessarily mean proof of a future crime or another crime, but Ron has a history of violence and a documented history of violence. One of the things that his ex came out and said that when she said, you know, she was ready to leave and she was ready to get out, he takes a wrench and he bashes her over the head. She has to go and get 7 stitches. And that was the end of that relationship. And there's other accounts of Ron not being the most balanced individual when it comes to self-control. So there's a history of violence. There's a history of charges there. He also went to the dump, like right around the time of after these murders would have taken place. He has no license, so he shouldn't have been doing that. We don't know what happened there either. It might have just been trash. We don't really know the answer. But again, never really looked into or investigated. How much would his past behavior possibly play influence on this when Richard Allen has no history, but Ron Logan certainly did?
It's an important and nuanced legal question because although prior crimes don't always come in during a jury trial, it's sort of fact dependent, they can absolutely be considered in terms of probable cause, in terms of charging an individual with a crime. The police can look at, hey, this guy has a violent past, he has these prior instances of violent conduct, that makes it more likely that he may have committed this crime. Now the prosecution might be a little hard pressed to tell the jury about it, but at least at the initial charging stage, it is a valid consideration and can lead to more revealing information as the investigation proceeds.
Let's now take a look at the case from what happened with the FBI. They got their probable cause affidavit. I think a lot of people are even really aware of this part of the case. They did get a probable cause affidavit. The lead agent from the FBI who was on this, who wrote that affidavit, which I actually read verbatim on the air just the other day. People can go back and listen to that or watch that on YouTube or wherever they're getting podcasts. It is such a striking document. The lead agent says, I basically believe that Ron Logan is our guy. And then they went in, they did the search of his home, his outbuildings. They had on the probable cause affidavit the right to go take all of his digital devices, go through basically everything as they tried to piece together other pieces of evidence, the fibers that were identified on some of the girls, possible DNA that was never really matched to anybody. But again, they didn't really do that with Ron Logan, or if they did in that time, we don't know about it. So they go do this investigation, they get all their findings, and then Delphi says, we're good, you can leave, our Keystone cops have got it from here. And they're handed from the FBI the findings of what they did in that investigation. And we're talking FBI investigation, so these are people who have a lot of reps in this. And when they get that information, they essentially say, everything we just talked about right there, and God knows what else they found because we don't know the answer to that. They say, I think we're going to look somewhere else. That to me, I mean, that just seems insane. I mean, how would you be looking at that? I mean, if you were the local prosecutor and you have these sort of things handed to you, what would possibly shift you to go and say, all of this that's handed to us verbatim and really, really doesn't look good for Ron Logan, that you're going to say, let's look somewhere else?
Tony, it's very peculiar for local law enforcement to essentially just ignore the FBI reports and their findings. Anytime as a defense attorney, when I see the FBI's on a case, I know I'm in for a formidable challenge because they know what they're doing and they do their work. Now, granted, they've come under some scrutiny here and there, and perhaps rightly or wrongly, but it is bizarre for this federal law enforcement agency with more resources than God, who has been doing this for decades and decades, to come to a local authority and say, hey, we think it's this guy, and the local authorities to kind of just blow it off. It's very bizarre.
Yeah, it's insanely bizarre. I mean, and plus you have at least, I mean, there's like 13 tips that pointed at Ron Logan. You literally have the woman who lived with him for a while, and her first reaction is, oh, well, that looks like Ron. And what I'm talking about here is the bridge guy photo. I'm going to bring this up here just for a second so everyone can see it in case they have not yet. And this comparison was actually done by the woman who holds the world record for the most successful prosecutions of criminals using forensic technology like she was doing here and comparing. And granted, you can't make a 100%, judgment on this, but everyone's going, well, why don't we have an example of Richard Allen compared to Bridge Guy? Why didn't we go out there and, at least, hire somebody that's the same height and then put it on the bridge, put them right there in the same position and go, does this remotely match up? If we shot it from the same angle, put him at the same place. This is Bridge Guy. This is Ron Allen. This is Bridge Guy. This is Ron Allen. As a layman, you look at it and go, well, that's pretty damn similar. Doesn't necessarily solve the case, but it certainly, I think, that might get you arrested.
It is a striking resemblance, no question. And it kind of goes back to just old school police work in the sense that physical descriptors matter. Looking at height, weight, race, other characters, build, things like that, gait, that sort of thing. Those things matter, and they matter to juries. And so when we look at that comparison there, anybody who looks at it is going to raise some eyebrows and say, wait a sec, that looks pretty close. And the fact that, in addition to all the other stuff we've talked about, was sort of lost on local prosecutors is a bit baffling to me.
I think I've gone beyond now believing that, this was a case where things snowballed. One person was trying to cover up one thing and the other person did that and the other person did this, and it ends up looking like a conspiracy. You have so many people involved here that either just ignored facts or had some sort of pressure or reason not to look at the facts of this case. And that's where we're left speculating. I have no idea what that could possibly be. But that's a lot of people, all the way from the prosecutor to the judge, how this was really pushed in one direction. I mean, that's another weird part to me on this, is Judge Gull. I'm not here to insinuate that she's trying to cover up a crime or anything, but her behavior, her rulings, didn't make any sense in terms of what she did and did not want to let into this case. The third party culprit, nah, not good enough. We just went over the third party culprit theory and what that is. Have you ever seen a judge not allow something like that in where there is that much evidence? I mean, it's not just like, oh, we think Chloe the dog bit somebody like in Delphi. You have a lot here that really points to there possibly being a third party culprit.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, the threshold for courts allowing in alternative suspect evidence is also very low. I've seen cases where the defense kind of just like points over there in the air and says, hey, I think it was probably somebody else. I can't tell you who and can't give you much information why. Here we have solid, credible evidence of a potential alternative suspect. And my understanding is that the ability to present that to the jury was extremely limited by Judge Gold or completely excluded. Yep. And so that is a tremendous problem, especially when that's probably a central defense for Richard Allen, and an appellate court is probably going to view it as such.
It makes me wonder, and maybe you can shed some light on this, why did the defense try to lean so hard on the Odinism when there was a really, really rock solid third-party culprit evidence in this case?
I'm wondering if part of it was either Judge Gold's rulings or how defense expected Judge Gold to rule regarding alternative suspect, and that the defense wanted something or needed something else to present, and they kind of had to take what they had. The Odinism defense is a bit esoteric. It's a bit far-fetched. It's a bit out there. And so that is not the strongest presentation to make to a jury, whereas saying, hey, I think it's the guy who on whose property these bodies turned up. That would be something much more compelling. But I, again, think Judge Gold handcuffed the defense throughout the entire case.
Why do you think she did that?
You know, questions persist about that. As I've mentioned before, this is a small town and people know each other. And, you know, there are allegiances. There are sometimes people wanting to protect other folks. Sometimes there is just sort of a laser focus and social pressure saying, hey, we've got to pin this on somebody. These poor two girls are dead. And so I just wonder if it was a constellation of those factors that came together. And it's no secret that a lot of judges have an overly favorable bias towards the prosecution. And that's at least what I personally observed from Judge Gold.
I mean, are you saying basically the prosecutor, presented, what he was going to the judge, and said, here's what's going on. And was, do you think she was just blindly following what the people she thought she could trust were giving her, and almost, in a way, maybe railroaded the judge a bit into going, my guys are saying this is bullshit, so I'm going with that. And I'm not, she wouldn't have done her due diligence, I guess, if she didn't look at any of this information that was out there, that was publicly out there.
Yeah, I hear you. Just in my perhaps jaded experience, some judges kind of get a one-track mind on cases. And even though they're supposed to be a neutral, impartial arbiter, they're not. And so, when they're denying defense motion after defense motion after defense motion and kind of giving the prosecution anything the prosecution wants, it starts to raise the specter of, is this an unbiased judicial officer on this case, or is she putting her hand on the scale on one side or the other? And that's a very real concern.
Or is she just phoning it in, basically? where it's like, I don't care. I'm busy. Whatever you guys say, we're going to go with that and just kind of keep it rolling along. I mean, I get, sometimes you get complicit in a job and I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, she seemingly has been trying to work her way up the bench, even trying to get to the Indiana Supreme Court. So I don't think you'd be really phoning something like this in, especially with such a high profile to the case. But it's so troubling. The other piece of this, and we talked briefly about it earlier, the girlfriend who has been testifying left and right to different media outlets and to the police. She said she tried calling the tip line like four or five times. Eventually, she had to just find another way to get a hold of them and finally present all the information. And then it was just kind of left at that. Good luck. We'll take it. Thank you very much. How do authorities typically take and detectives typically take that sort of information when you have someone who was a partner who can really, share their story? And there's records of crimes committed against this person from your potential suspect over here. How often do they just blow that part off and go, I would think that would be like really strong testimony. Someone who knows this person probably better than most.
You know, with a case, especially a high profile case that has a lot of attention, as law enforcement, you're going to get a lot of tips. And the vast majority of those tips are probably not going to have any merit at all. And in fact, they might be a wild goose chase for you. So sometimes law enforcement gets a little bit jaded in terms of receiving that information. They say, yeah, okay, fair enough. But here we have somebody who knows this alternative suspect really well, who knows their background, who can talk about specific instances of conduct and probably has evidence substantiating those things. And so certainly law enforcement should have looked more closely at these tips, given more weight to the information the ex-girlfriend was providing. She went on the show recently saying that she still thinks that Logan was capable of doing this.
Given that Ron Logan is now dead, obviously you can't prosecute a dead person. How does that create a roadblock at all for Richard Allen as he goes through appeals, especially if they're going to go in this direction of third party culprit? I know they've already brought that up in some of their filings on appeal here. Is just that, and specifically naming Ron Logan, the fact that he's dead, though, and you can't really go after him anymore or interview him or question him or do anything. Does that create any sort of issues for Richard Allen as he tries to fight for his freedom?
Tony, I might be in the minority on this, but I think it actually helps.
Okay.
And here's why. So if the person's still alive, defense can bring these accusations of alternative suspect, and Ron Logan could get up and say, hey, that wasn't me. And he could try to reconstruct history and, you know, try to get, you know, trick other people or persuade other people to testify falsely for him. But when he's dead, dead man tell no tales. And so that allows Richard Allen to have more control of the Ron Logan narrative on their appeal and on potentially in a new trial.
The biggest document that I would like to see, and only the FBI has, and they're not certainly not going to release their findings, is the document that says what they found on the property. We have the probable cause affidavit, but we don't know what happened after that because it was handed over to local Delphi authorities and investigators and to the state, and then the FBI was kicked out. And the FBI's done. Here's our work. You do what you will with it. And they did nothing with it, basically. That document, that information that they found on the probable cause search that they executed on Ron Logan's property, is that ever going to come to light? Can it ever come to light if Richard Allen does get a second trial? Can that sort of information be subpoenaed on discovery for Ron Logan, considering he was a different suspect, but it doesn't directly deal with the accusations against Richard Allen, but it certainly points to the other suspect. Could that ever see the light of day? And could it end up being a factor that certainly helps Richard Allen?
You know, if I was Richard Allen's appellate attorney, I would be pleading with the appellate court to release that information, because not only would it help on the underlying case, but it could help the appeal, certainly, to garner additional evidence in support of Richard Allen's case. And there's nothing overly out of bounds about that type of a report. There might be sensitive information, that kind of thing, but that can usually be overcome through legal maneuvering. And so, yes, I think it's likely that information could at least get to Richard Allen's attorneys and potentially the public later on.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
You're in the thick of a true crime saga, every detail sinking in. And then, wham, a commercial about something you couldn't care less about. It's like being served a microwaved dinner at a five-star restaurant. But it doesn't have to be this way. Go for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get uninterrupted, ad-free episodes, extended interviews that dig even deeper into the muck, and early access so you can brag to your friends. It's like ordering the secret menu at a crime buffet. So, search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and savor every twisted detail without interruption.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com. Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.